Welcome to the ID10T podcast number 1140. Hey, it is almost mid-November of 2021, and The Wall is back on NBC Friday nights. Right now, you can watch it Friday nights on NBC 8, 7 Central. So please keep watching it, because I'd love to keep making it. I really love doing that show. So, The Wall, Friday nights, 8, 7 Central on NBC. But let's talk about you, the ID10T community. Events at ID10T.com. Like John, who writes, my name is John Avina, a longtime listener to the podcast. Finally decided to make a thing. The thing in question is a comic book called Lockjaw and Pistolero, which is a Western tale of a mariachi player trying to get his life back on track after losing everything to a sorceress. This sounds amazing. It is a Western pulp sprinkled with horror and Latin folklore. Lockjaw and Pistolero brings to light the diversity of the West in a new rendition of the gunslinger mythos. Please consider backing the Patreon at patreon.com/JohnAvina. That's JohnAvina. Wonderful work, John. Thank you so much for submitting. Events at ID10T.com to everyone else. This episode is one of my favorite people, Ron Funches. Amazing human being, brilliant comedian, one of the best, great host, amazing voiceover artist, great writer. Ron's just the best. He is on a show called Poorly Drawn Lines, which my company Fish Ladder is one of the executive producers of. Poorly Drawn Lines is based on the fantastic webcomic, and it is now an animated show it's on Cake, which is on FXX. But if you go to Hulu and you just search for Poorly Drawn Lines, you can just see the episodes there as well. So please watch Poorly Drawn Lines. Just a fantastic show, and Ron is fantastic on it. And also, we recorded this several weeks back because, just a little show note here, we do talk in this episode about how I'm still playing Animal Crossing, like, after all this time. Actually, I think I had stopped for a while while we recorded this, but I just started again. One of my complaints was like, gosh, there just aren't really many updates anymore. Since this podcast is posted, there was a major update to Animal Crossing. So Lydia and I are both way into it again. So, you know, if you're an Animal Crossing fan and you're listening to the podcast and you're like, why are you saying there's not an update? There was just an update. Well, this was recorded before that. So just some fun show notes, just deep in the weeds for the Animal Crossing fans out there. Yes, I'm still playing. Yes, Lydia and I are designing animals' homes. There's a whole design element in the game that we're way into. We just love it. And also, we love Ron Funches, who is this episode of the ID10T podcast number 1140, which starts now. Roll the thing.
Initiating ID10T protocol.
Ronald Funches.
Hello, Chris.
What's up?
Nothing. Just came in on one of my least favorite things, a white man playing acoustic guitar.
I might laugh at that for the whole hour. I'm so sorry. I want to sing about my feelings. Oh my God, Ron. I swear to God, that was one of the funniest things. As comedians, I feel like most of the time we're sort of like goalies. Like, we're sort of ready for bits and we can sort of like, you process them really fast and go, okay, I see the matrix code behind that joke. I'm going to add this. I was so sucker punched by that joke, Ron. There are tears burning my eyes. Oh my God.
Because we were both in an authentic place where you were enjoying it and I just told my truth.
You said something on Talking Dead last week where I laughed so hard, like the contact in my eye like folded in my eye because I was squinting from laughing. I can't remember what it was, but oh man, already a great fun time, Mr. Funches. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. Happy, doing well, working, trying good. To relax a bit. How are you? How are you?
I'm good. You know, playing a lot of guitar. Well, the last iteration of my tour, I was kind of folding music in. Mm-hmm. And this whole time that I haven't been able to tour, I was like, you know, maybe I should get better at this if I'm going to take a guitar on the road. So I just, you know, I work on it.
Nice. But
back to the old days. Well, you know, for the longest time, at least when I was growing up, if a comic had a guitar, most people's reaction was not dissimilar to yours, because mm-hmm. comedy music on stage was, you know, it took a weird turn. But then, you know, you got your Tenacious D's, your Flight of the Conchords, you know, it's like some people really made it cool. And like
Garfunkel and Oates.
Yeah, Garfunkel and Oates, a phenomenal example. They made it cool again. And and a song is just a great, fun way to take like a mediocre bit that sort of works, but then you put it into the structure of a song and then something fun and magical can happen. And it's just fun.
Yeah, stuff. That's anyway. What I'm like also why I love Bo Burnham so much, where you'd be like, oh, you're so funny and you're weird. And then like, oh, and then your songs are catchy too. It's not fair. You got everything's going.
I know. And I wonder if that's the thing too. Like, because I want my next special to be musical. People are going to be like, well, it's not Bo Burnham. It's like, well, of course it's not. We're different. And, you know, he's a mad genius. And, you know, you can't – it's like comparing people to – you know, it's like, well, it's funny, but you're not George Carlin. Of course not. Yeah. There's like one of those. Like, what are you – of course. Of course.
And that's always like to me, to you. I'm, you know, people are always like so – hold things in their heart, head to high esteem. I love George Carlin, but I think there's plenty of comedians I like better than George Carlin. But that's to me.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's so I think people forget sometimes, like, well, it's all subjective. Everyone has different points of view. Comedy's not all one thing. It's like music, you know, there are like sub genres of comedy. But for some reason, comedy's always just had this like, no, it's all one thing, and it's whatever my opinion is, you know? It's like, no, it's a lot of things.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. I think it's also, I think the instrument makes it, with music, you have that thing where like, well, you have to learn how to at least somehow play something before anyone takes you seriously. But I think comedy is such a self-defined job that you can start right away and be like, I'm a comedian. You know, and so many people think that when they come to your show, it's the thing. It's one of the only, you know, one would go up to someone after a concert and go like, I bet I could play just as good as you. My friends say I can play guitar great, too.
I mean, nice job, The Edge. But I feel like I, you know, if I had a guitar pedal, I could probably play in U2 as well. You know, like, no, you probably couldn't. You probably couldn't. But I think that's sort of the difference between there are. I don't know why it makes me think of like how bowling used to be very popular in the 50s and 60s. Mm-hmm. And then it just wasn't as cool anymore. Well, my dad did it. It was actually a really cool thing to do. And then it wasn't anymore. And I think some of it has to do with the fact that a lot of sports that were very aspirational became very popular, like sports that are like really hard to do. And I think at a certain point, people were like, oh, everyone can go bowling, you know? But like, not everyone can be a star baseball player, a star football player, a star. And so it's
simple as like slam dunk a basketball. I think about that all the time. I'm like, I would trade in so many show memories for the opportunity to slam dunk one time in someone's face. I bet that feels like getting a comedy special. I bet it does.
I mean, I'm not even sportsy, and I can imagine what it must feel like when people just like two-handed dunk a ball and then the backboard shatters and just rains glass behind them in slow motion. Like the amount of power that a person must feel to be. But I would venture to guess, though, that there are professional athletes who go, I wish I could just make people laugh. Like the idea of going into a room full of strangers and just, you know, saying these, like, uttering these spells, these enchantments, and then all of a sudden people laugh. A lot of people look at that and go, God, I wish I could do that.
No, I didn't really consider that much of a skill until I started. I remember I met some athletes in like that. And then I hosted an award show for casting directors, the Casties. That's not the real name, but I want it to be that.
And the casty goes to.
And you got to, it goes on a little like fishing pole. You put it out. Yeah. But I was so nervous because I was like, oh, these are the people that like I go in the room and are like in charge of if I get this role or whatever. And I started introducing some of these people and then listening to them talk. And I'm like, they don't know how to speak in public for shit. Like, oh, why am I so scared of these people that can't do what I do? And that really opened my eyes to a lot of things. Like I have stopped putting people on a pedestal, then we all have our gifts.
After someone accepted an award, did you get up on stage and just go, okay, thanks. Yeah, we'll let you know.
I wanted to do stuff like that, but I went there the year before and Paul Scheer and June Diane hosted and they did a wonderful job. But they did like so much of that stuff that I was like, I want to go a different way.
Got it.
But to be honest with you, that was the right tax because they only listened when you talked about like casting directing stuff.
I mean, the whole casting process to me, and you've been doing a lot of acting stuff lately, and the whole casting process to me always seemed unconquerable. It just wasn't within my, hosting casting was different, a different thing in my mind, but mm-hmm. acting casting, there are just so many hurdles, and I sort of feel like part of the test is, can you remain mentally, can you retain your mental fortitude just to even get through the process? Mm-hmm. That kind of meta audition is almost part of the audition as well, it seems like.
I agree. The pressure of like callbacks and then like when you're in like the producer sessions and it's just down to like you and two other people and they're basically like, these are the guys that you're fighting it out for. Here's your Squid Game partners. And if one of you is going to get that steak knife out and make it through. And then they tell you the amount of money that one of you is going to get. And you're like, this is how do you, and then you got to just literally do it. And then just, if you don't get a call the next day, you know. And that was something like, you know, if you aren't in this business, I think it's surprising to people. My wife has done a couple things recently and she just was like, oh, they don't call you when you don't get it. And I was like, no, you just have to assume at some point.
And very rarely would you, even if your representatives call and say like, oh, you know, how come this didn't work out? Rarely do you get much more than they just went in another direction. Mm-hmm. Okay, so the direction away from me. Okay, got mm-hmm. it, I got it. And sometimes that's all it is. It's like shopping for a Christmas present or something. It's like, well, you know, when you see it, you know, it's like they have an idea in their mind and they just, sometimes if you've been on the other side of the table for castings, you just kind of know when you see it. You can have these vague ideas of what you want, but
yeah, I think that's important to try to remember both sides of it. That's something that was hard for me, especially when you're like I want this money to eat, so please, I know I'm talented, so give it to me. But then the more I write things, the more I try to produce and make things, the more I'm like, oh, sometimes there are just views you have in your head. It doesn't matter how talented a person is if they don't fit that role directly that you had in mind. It's not personal to them, and that's something that's been helpful for me to try to do both sides of that, so I don't freak out. But I've definitely had some, but sometimes there's runs where I'm like, why am I here? Like I did one right before the pandemic, where it was me and two other guys, and they were both just like similar cut, both wore glasses and both were white guys. And I was like, well, you either are. And the whole thing was that they were the brother of the main character. So I was like, either there's going to be some heavy rewriting.
or I'm probably not getting this.
Well, you know, it's I don't know why, but for some reason, hosting auditions were so much easier for me because I had much more of a sense of who I am, and so I knew in a hosting audition how to personalize the material, and I did it purposely. I was very much like who I would be on the show because I thought like, well, this is what I would do. I would hate to get the job and then and then try to do what I do. And they go, why are you doing that? Or it doesn't work. So I would do what I would do. And if they didn't want that, then I sort of felt like, well, I don't feel bad about that because you just didn't want that thing. And if you hire me, then you want that thing. And I could never port that over for acting stuff because it just the performance of it, or it's like you're making choices that aren't you. And so I was never able to carry that over to theatrical stuff.
I think it very much is the same. I think there's this like 20% that is different where like you find like a Daniel Day-Lewis, you find these like people who are able to transform themselves. But from most of the shows I've been on, like the actor isn't that far from the character. You know, the writers start to lean in towards what the actor has and they try to pull that out for them. And I think that's just simple, great coaching where you try to lean into someone's strength and not highlight their weaknesses. And that was something I did have to change in the way that I went into auditions, where before I would go into like for just about anything, or I go in for like some like, oh, you work at some accounting firm and you're smarmy. And I'm like, and then at some point, I think it was this thing for like that Kevin Feige was directing and it was going to be in front of him. And I saw the role and I was like, that's, I can't do good at that. And I was like, I don't want to take this audition. And my manager even was calling me and was like, you like get in front of him. You want to see him. And I go, yeah, I do want to get in front of him. But I think I know about him is this guy makes movies. So he's going to keep making movies. And I'd rather get in front of him with a character that I could do well in and highlights my skill sets instead of me having to mute the aspects of myself that I consider special, mute my optimism, mute my like childlike joy in order to play this role. That's not going to do well for anyone.
Smart idea.
I had to just tell like, look, if it doesn't highlight what I'm naturally good at, then we kind of just have to pass on it.
That's really smart. And it is, I think we do convince ourselves like, no, you got to chase everything down. It's like, no, because like you said, that wouldn't have necessarily benefited you. And then you would have wasted your time. You would have wasted their time. You potentially could have wasted an opportunity. But I just remember in the 90s, when I auditioned for theatrical stuff, everyone wanted Matthew Perry. Everyone wanted like that smarmy. Oh, okay. You know? And so I think even just sort of talking about it, it's like, oh, when you're doing a theatrical audition, it's so easy to chase what you think they want. Mm-hmm. And with hosting stuff, I just did what I would want. Mm-hmm. So I think like, how do you just do what you would want to do? And then, like you said, then don't take it personally because they see so many people and it's not like they go, we're not giving this role to Ron because frankly, we just don't like him and we reject it. It's like, no, they just picked somebody else, you know, mm-hmm. That person fit with the rest of the cast or the energy or the vibe or the thing that they were trying to go for. And a lot of times they also find out they were wrong and they'll recast, you know, it's like, oh, we thought we knew, we had to recast this role, which of course sucks for the actor they hired. So you just never know.
No, I think it's similar to dating. Like when you go from when I was having a hard time with dating, it was a lot of me like, what does this person want me to be? I'm going to try to lean into that. I'm going to hide parts of myself that they might not like. And right. When it started going well for me is when I'd like, this is who I am. This is what I like. If this date goes well, we're going to come back to my house and I'll show you my office covered in action figures. So you know exactly what you're getting into.
Yeah. And that's hard to do when you're young because you don't quite know who you are yet. I mean, some, you know, there certainly are people who do, but you really, it takes you a bit of time to even get to that point where you can know who you are and what you're about so that you can be yourself and then be comfortable with that. There's like a series of, you know, there's like a series of layers that happens, like, you know, modifications. It's like you start out as little Mario, then you get the mushroom, and then you get the fire mushroom. You know, it's like you have to get those modifications.
The Tanuki suit, yeah.
The Tanuki suit, my favorite, the Tanuki suit.
Got to wear the Tanuki suit. I bet it stinks, though. I bet it smells horrible. It gets wet a lot.
I mean, he's probably going to the bathroom in it, you know, like like a wetsuit, because you know it's like there's no time to stop and go to the bathroom. So.
No, not in those levels. There's a timer and there's a sun chasing you sometimes.
If you're doing a speed run, what are you supposed to do? You know, like what are you supposed to do? What are you playing right now?
Oh, thank you for asking. I'm playing a lot of things. It's been a great year. I didn't think it was going to be such a good gaming year, but it's been wonderful. Right now I'm playing Metroid Dread a lot, single player, especially when I'm on set. That's like my set game right now. Otherwise, I would have already tried to go through it, but I try to keep it for when I'm at work. And then when I'm at home, when I'm streaming on my Twitch, we've been playing Back 4 Blood, The Left 4 Dead spiritual successor, and playing a little bit of the Avengers. And I've just started a charity stream for the Boys and Girls Club of Portland for the rest of October. I'm going to be streaming, raising money for them. Cause I was like, oh, what? I got a reason to play video games that is altruistic and makes me feel good in the world. Let's do it.
No downside. There's literally no downside.
Not at all. I tell my wife, she asks what you're doing. I'm like, this is for the children.
Ron, are you playing games again? Excuse me. I am helping kids.
Mm-hmm. Sure, yes, I could probably just donate on my own.
What's your Twitch channel?
Just Ron_Funches. If you want to come by, it used to be just Ron Funches, but then I forgot the password to that account. So now it's Ron_Funches. Oh, no. One day I'll make a call, try to combine them. We'll see. But yeah, people come. It's a fun time. We just hang out, play video games. It's pretty chill. I like being on Twitch. Not all day, but I like doing it a little bit.
I'm pretty sure I told you when you did Talking Dead, like I only just quit playing Animal Crossing like five, mm-hmm. 6 weeks ago. And, you know, on the one hand, it's easy to get cranky with like, God, they just didn't like the updates on that game. First of all, I don't know why they didn't. It's like, okay, well, once you buy the game, that's it. There really isn't any reason for them for years to be spending money to add more content from their point of view. I wish they did as a player. Then I thought, like, well, why not just DLC packs? Like, they would have made a fortune. You know, if we could have gotten Brewster like a year ago or just like other stuff just to sort of keep people engaged, I would have spent money on that game forever if they had doled it out.
Yeah, no, they don't do a good job at simple, like, just quality of life improvements, like trying to like sell multiple things at a time or do anything in multiple time or just trying to go to a multiplayer island and without someone interrupting you every 5 minutes when they jumped into it. But still, I mean, that game is going to hold a place in time as like save most people's mental health during the heights of the pandemic when we were super scared. That game really came through and was like, well, at least I can plant these flowers. I can try to make some hybrid colors and I can get this wrestling ring put together in my backyard.
Oh, there's no question. There's no question that game, you know, even for the few minor complaints, and my complaints are really that I wish I could just play it forever. You know, like that's my complaint is I just wish there was new stuff forever. But you're right. I mean, to live in this, to have basically this like awful thing going on in the world globally, and then to go into this utopian, idealistic, you know, talking animal world where everything is just simple and it's just simple tasks. So all I have to do is just return this lost item to a talking fox and my bill. Oh, that's fantastic. Oh, he gave me a shirt. You know, like it was so fucking joyful. So there's no question that it will always, always make me happy.
I also wanted to know what it's like to be a person that can play a game just one game consistently. I've never been like that. I always have like a multiplayer game and a single player game I'm playing. I play so many new, I'm thinking maybe it's more about me because now I'm thinking about myself. When I was young, we didn't have a lot of money for games. So I only never had more than like two or three games. And now I'm like,
I get all the games.
Well, that's a reasonable assessment, but I can tell you, as someone who does stick with one game for an unreasonably long period of time, I would say it's probably light OCD, because you like the patterns. Like, the patterns feel very familiar. I mean, I literally have the same breakfast every single morning. I like the pattern of it. I like not having to think about it. It feels very comforting to me. I get excited the night before because I already know what my breakfast is going to be the next morning.
What is it? I want to know now.
Scrambled egg whites with spinach, rye toast, and extra crispy turkey bacon, and an almond latte.
Okay, that's a good breakfast.
Right? It's kind of it's pretty healthy, and it's, you know, it's good, and it's always there. Like, I love the comfort of patterns. Like, they just feels nice. Like, and also, the older you get, your body does not like to be surprised by foods. It does not always react favorably. And they're like, what the fuck? Why did you a waffle? What the fuck are you doing? Oh no, this will not stand. And then,
yeah, I found that recently too. Or if I'm like, oh, it's a cheat meal day, I'm gonna get a waffle. My buddy's like, no, we don't. What has happened? We've gotten used to this Monday. We're to Friday. We want our protein shake or our overnight oats. Where we do, and I love bringing my overnight oats on set. And other people are eating their crafty breakfast burrito, and they're looking at my cinnamon covered apple overnight oats that my wife made. You feel loved.
And then on that Saturday, your body's like, no, no, whatever you're putting in here now, we're just going to instantly turn that into diarrhea.
Yeah, you got it.
And then don't do this ever again. I mean, when I think about, you know, like times maybe 20 years ago where I could just, you know, go out and then at 2 o'clock in the morning, just eat like a chili cheeseburger. Like, it hurts my stomach now, even thinking that there was ever a time where that was a thing my body could handle.
It's magical. I love that, those magical early days of comedy. But that's when you were like getting paid in food. So when you're like, oh man, I still think about that. I can't have it, but like, oh, like doing a late set and then going to a diner for like a good club sandwich with some curly fries. That
oh my was, god, the late night curly fries. Oh, so club was club sandwich your thing? Was,
yeah, I love a good club sandwich. Yeah,
I loved a good grilled ham and cheese from a diner that just felt like the grill had retained the flavors of like 50 years of grill work, just all in there, you know, that magical. Yeah, it
was got a little beef in there, a little fish in there.
Who knows? Whatever it is, they've all, every food that has passed through has imbued the grill with some type of flavor modifier that that just all bakes into whatever is, you know, whatever you're eating in the moment.
Mm-hmm. Ugh. I don't know. Do you? I don't know why I think you're a vegan. Are you a vegan?
No.
Turkey
no.
bacon, you said. Do you eat red meat?
I do, but not often, but not really by choice. I just lost my taste for it a little bit. Like, I don't know why. Like, I think some of it, I have just genetically high cholesterol, so I have to take cholesterol medicine. And so, you know, when I kind of started going easy on red meat, I started the cholesterol medicine. That was very helpful. And it's not like you can eat everything in the world with cholesterol medicine, but you can. But for me, I'm a little lax with it. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, because my wife very much is a red meat eater. And I just at a certain point, just like, I don't know. Like, I like In-N-Out every once in a while. Mm-hmm. Maybe once a month I'll have a steak, but I just don't have the urge to eat red meat that often. I don't know why. I just don't.
I find myself losing it as I get older. And now I'll tell you the truth. I like a good black bean burger most of the time over just a mediocre burger. Give me like a nice savory black bean burger. I'm very happy. But there's also, I just was going to ask you because I saw Seth Rogen post about it. And this is burger place I've been going to. And I didn't know if other people were going until he posted about it. But this place called Gold Burger LA in Silver Lake. They do. Now that's some good red meat. That's a good burger.
I have not been to Goldberger. I don't know about this, but I don't live too far from there, so we'll check that out.
You should check it out. Just a nice simple walk up. They little smash burger, grill some onions. But the way they, you know, to me, a good burger is always more than the sum of its parts. And then when it's all melted together and milded, and then they do the curly fries as well and some homemade pies. I didn't come to do any promo, but I will. Goldberger LA.
All right, so I'll try Goldberger. I really am. Lydia and I really are in and out people. We'll like go to an event and then drive through. We'll skip the dinner at the event and drive through in and out.
I was on a burger kick for a while. Every Sunday, we go down and try to find a new burger place. There was this place ran by this 90 something year Bill's Burgers here in the Valley. The guy's 92, cash only, no fries, only Lay's chips. Oh. Yeah, so he was. Yeah, you get him. You see what he's about. Not he was the only person on the grill. Not, I don't think that he might have closed recently. Not sure, but he was doing it by himself through COVID. Him and his wife.
Oh, God bless you, Bill. I hope you're out there. Well, you know, growing up in bowling centers, like bowling center snack bar food, it just has a magic to it that mm-hmm. is that kind of like. I don't know. It's just, it's the right amount of grease, you know, it's just like and in the setting, in the context of like a bowling center, I don't know. It's just like, you know, you get your fries all soggy with ketchup. I don't know. It's
no, I like it. Because it almost feels like it's not professionally, because it isn't usually, it didn't feel professionally made. It felt like, like, you're like, I'm having a fun mom made me this hot dog, you know?
Yeah, it's like a step above like a pool party barbecue. Or
yes, exactly.
But it's indoors.
Yes, and you paid for it.
I really miss, that is the one thing that I miss about traveling and being on the road, is just finding the local diner mm-hmm. to go to after the show. It's like, well, what's the great mom and pop diner? What's the great local, you know? And especially if it's a college town. College towns have the, you know, the best local diners.
Yeah. And weird names for their food. And you're like, this is fun. This is very local. But I go to Bloomington, Indiana, or trying like a garbage plate in Rochester. That was fun. Have you ever had a garbage plate?
No.
Oh, it's gross. It's it's basically all the barbecue fixings that you would get on one plate. So usually like a base of like potato wedges and macaroni salad, and then put like a burger patty, a sliced sausage, a hot dog, and you just scoop it all up. It's my friend Gabe loves them, but I had one. I was like, this is too much.
I could not do that. I don't think I could do that right before bed. I think I would just be up all night. I was just not. Especially like. You do that after a show, and then you got to get up and do radio the next morning. It's like, I can't. I'm sorry. I had to call in. I had to call in sick because there's just no way you could get around that. I'd be up all night.
Garbage plate will do you in. Absolutely. No, you don't want to have that in early morning radio. Oh, that takes me back even thinking about it, though.
It is easy to see how. You really have to do extra work. It's easy to be healthy when you're home and in your own environment and you have your own set of rituals and everything is, you know, within reach and you figured out, you know, but being like eating healthy on the road. And I don't look at eating healthy as like for any reason other than just to feel better. Like, mm-hmm. you know, it's like you feel better when you eat healthier consistently. You just do. And it's really hard to do on the road, especially because you have to eat fast. You don't know when you're going to eat again sometimes, so you want to fill up. And it's like, if you don't eat a lot before a show because you don't want to get weighed down, then you do two shows, you're starving. So, of course, you're going to be like, I need a basket of fries. I mm-hmm. need a fucking grilled cheese sandwich because you're just trying to get all those carbs in that you just expended on stage.
Yeah, no, you gotta prepare. That's been a thing for me, and been mostly helpful with my wife. sends me out with my, at the end, she's like, well, if it all breaks down, always remember you got this protein powder and a shaker cup and I put in your bag. So if you don't have anything, you can drink this protein shake. And that saved me several times at like airports or late night things where I'm like, well, either I'm going, and then it's a battle with myself. Cause I'm like, well, I can order this McDonald's or I can drink this protein shake. And then I usually let the cheap side of me comes out and we're like, well, you already have the protein shake. You want to pay to eat poorly. That sounds like a bad situation. You just drink this protein shake. So that's usually helpful. But yeah, it really highlights. I mean, I've been following a lot. I've been getting more interested in stuff like that as I get older and taking charge of my health. But following accounts like Food Babe on Instagram, she's very helpful. Just helping you find alternate foods to eat and just really knowing how it's not set up for you to succeed. If you're not cooking stuff on your own, it's very hard to find. There's no chain health restaurant in America, and it wouldn't do well if it was here.
It's hard. It is hard to find. And it's also, you know, I'm sure it's also hard to mass produce health food of that quality as well, you know, and it is, you're right. It's kind of set up to be addictive. It's a little bit like a casino, right? Like a casino could be fun, but it's not there to be your friend, you know? Yeah. It's there to look like your friend, you know? Just like fast food, hey, I'm your buddy! Now I'm gonna fucking kick your colon in half, you know? Like it's not, but then you want it again the next day. So it's not designed. Furman, when we were touring a lot together, Furman said there was this book called Eat This, Not That, which was supposed to help you navigate like, what are the healthiest things at like big chain restaurants and fast food chains? You know, if you don't have any other choice, but you want to skew on the healthier side, like what can you do? But a lot of places now are starting to throw in like, you know, meatless stuff. And you're right. Like a good black bean burger or something is, you just don't feel as bad as eating like a greasy burger sometime, you know, it feels good.
Yeah, no, it feels good. I tell you, yeah, I go to when I want to stay healthy, but I'm feeling real fast foody, veggie grill, black bean burger with lentil soup makes me feel good. And just saying it out loud makes me feel like an old man.
Well, yeah, first you have to zero in on that's your meal. And then the earlier you eat it and still call it dinner, like if you're at 4:30, dinner, it's, you know, the end is near. I feel like age is, you know, yes, age is just a number, but it's also, I feel like we start to get old when we choose convenience and comfort first, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like, hey, yeah, you know, I could wear this fashionable thing, but this is much more comfortable, you know. And there's nothing wrong with that.
I think you start getting older as a man when you start just wearing anything someone hands you.
Put this on. All right, it'll cover me.
Like, whatever. Jiffy Lube. Just Jiffy Lube shirt.
Hey, that's cool. Where'd you get that? I don't know.
Someone handed it to me.
That would be a fucking great... That would actually kind of be a great gag for a store, which was just like, everything's just sectioned by sizes. You don't have to think about it. You just grab whatever size you are, and maybe there's an NFC thing in your phone, and it just charges it, and you leave. And you don't even have to think about it. You don't have to fucking try it on. You don't have to look at it. Mm-hmm. It just is. And whatever it is, you're fine with.
Yeah, and I'd call it, well, it's clean. So when you go back home and you're in an argument,
you're not going to be naked if you put this on. Yeah. So that's really the main thing, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, what are you worried about? You know, what do you care? That's the other thing too. Is that the older you get, the less you really care. Like, oh, do I look? Yeah, I don't know. Doesn't matter. Who cares? I don't
fucking. Yeah. It's good. That's the beautiful thing, especially, you know, the more we're going through things, pandemic, losing friends. It's like, quit, you're like, oh no, who knows how long I'll be here? Quit caring about what other people think. I gotta, if I just want to go out in my pajamas and have fun, I gotta do that. That's been a big switch with me. I'm always like, I was like, I want to be the best comedian. And then when I was started getting acting, I was like, I want to be like, you know, I want to be one of the best. And now my whole thing's like, I want to have a fun life. Like,
that's the best. That's the best, Ron, because number one, you can't really quantify who's the best comedian or who's the best actor. And even if you did achieve that, it wouldn't feel satisfying for more than a few seconds. And then you'd feel like you had to climb some other mountain. So all you can do really is just ask that question. Like, am I going to have fun? Is this going to be fun? Do I want to have a fun life? That's the absolute best. And it might take you to those other places. Mm-hmm. And it's okay to have those experiences as long as you don't need them to define your existence. You can enjoy them. They just don't have to be who you are, you know, and that's okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that was hard for me. Truly, until the pandemic, I didn't have it. I was still, if you asked me, like, you know, I'd be like, I'm a dad and stuff, but I would be, in my heart, I'm like, I'm a comedian, you know? And having that taken away from me and being like, oh, I still have to find value in myself, in my life, without that, sucked for a while. I was depressed, and I talked to my wife about it, and for a while, even she, like, didn't get it, because she's like, we have a good life, we're so lucky that, like, we're able to still stay home. You don't have to go on the road. You have work coming in with voiceovers. And I was like, yeah, but this is who I thought I was. This is what I thought I was always going to do. Like, even like, you know, acting or whatever, there's always that thing of people like, well, if everything goes to shit, there's always the road still. And then you're like, well, it's not. So I have to.
It's not there. There's no road right
now. You lied to me.
Well, yeah, but, you know, yeah, because 2 years ago, people would be like, oh, what's going to happen? What's the whole world going to shut down? Fucking shut up. Oh, wait, actually it did. Ah, fuck. Yeah. But that's good, because it's good to learn that you are who you are, not what you do, you know, like, you're not your job, you know, but the tricky part is, as comedians, the foundational element of what we do relies on approval from other people, you know, like, I guess you could be the kind of comedian who's like, well, I'm going to tell whatever jokes I want, and if people don't laugh, I don't give a shit. I don't think there's many of those, but I don't want to be that. Like, I like when the audience has fun. I like when we find bits together, like, oh, I gave a little bit, you gave a little bit, and we form this really nice kind of fun relationship. But the downside to it is you can really get into that, like, oh, I need approval, or this doesn't exist, or it's not real. And it's like, no, you know, that's a thing you do. It doesn't have to define you.
Yeah, no, I think that's a hard lesson to learn for a lot of freelance artists of any type. You know, you see it in wrestling, you see it in things I love, and you're like, should you really be maiming yourself to the point that you're going to be injured for the rest of your life for this, like, crowd of 200 people and this $50? Like, you can find a middle ground here and just have a good life and have fun and still be happy. And the thing that I found for myself was that I was afraid, it was like, oh, if I'm not challenging myself, if I'm not, like, pushing myself to be the best, then I wouldn't work hard. And I found the opposite to be true, that the more fun I'm having, the more inspired I feel, the more relaxed I feel, the more work I tend to be able to get done.
Yeah, because there's if the whole idea is that you just want to have fun, or you want to see the fun in things, then you're not motivated by the fear of failure. You're motivated by the acquisition of fun. And that sort of running from whatever failure is, or, like, not doing enough X, Y, or Z, it's a really horrifying existence, and also a relatively unrewarding one, because it never ends. It just, even if you work on bigger stuff, then the stakes get bigger. And then the stress gets bigger, you know? Like, you never know that when you're young, and you just think, like, oh, my problems will be solved if I just make... It's like, well, no, some of them will be solved, but then you'll just get these other ones that seem even more intense. Yeah. So it just isn't the way.
Worried that people are going to forget about you. Worried that, like, if you take a week off, life's going to move on. And it's like, that's no way to live. And, you know, I think when you're... I don't want to waste so much time being like, oh, this is something I could have just fixed in my head. Like, I don't want to be 60, be like,
God damn it. I wasted 50 years just trying to, shit. You mean all I had to do was, oh, man, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But also, when you think about, like, every work accomplishment that, well, you know, when I think about, I'll say me, like, every work accomplishment that I've had, I've done more stuff than I ever thought I would ever do. And I love it, and I appreciate it. The things that I tend to remember, the things that I go back to that are satisfying and make me feel all warm and fuzzy are like the trip I took with friends, or like the other, you know, like a week ago, for the first time in my wife's pregnancy, we started to see like the baby like move underneath her skin. So alien. Mm-hmm. And that's amazing. Or just like, she'll just put my hand on her stomach and I'll just feel it move around. It's like, I will never forget that as long as I live. Like, that is going to be the thing that like burrows down deep into my gut and is satisfying more than, you know, remember that one talk show I did, or that one, you know, like, I don't know. Not that those things aren't important, but it just, the satisfying element of them doesn't stick as long as the IRL personal.
Yeah. No, and I think for myself, like, I mean, similar to just talking about video games, like, and just in life, I like new experiences. I like going through new things that I never thought I'd go through. So, like, I'm very excited about this. Anything that I've done, especially when they're just fun, I'm like, I can't believe I did that. I can't believe I hosted a slip and slide show that got shut down because of diarrhea and everybody talked about it on the news.
Oh my God, Ron, I forgot about that. I'm so sorry. I was so excited for you when I saw that you were hosting this show. And when I heard about that, I was like, oh no. Because again, it's horrible. Like, something like that's horrifying because, you know, the show just stops. But at the same time, it's that sort of lesson of like the entertainment business, like, you never, it's hard just to get a show on the air. And then once a show's on the air, you still don't even know if it's going to stay on. And then for a ridiculous reason, I mean, I had so much empathy for you and that whole crew and the whole, everyone who was making that show. I'm so sorry.
I appreciate that. That's more than most friends who just hit with the poop jokes right away.
No, I know. It's just, I've just been doing this for so long, and I know, like, I just know how heartbreaking it is. Like, even just because it has a lot to do with how we categorize our wins. It's like, I got a show. It's on the air. We're airing on this date. What just happened? You know, and it just like, oh, come on, man. You know, like, I really felt for you in that moment. I really did.
Thank you. I mean, look for the positives, and the positives for me were that, like, I just recently fell in love with hosting, right? Like, I did Nice One a few years ago, maybe 3 or 4 years ago now. And who knows? But I never know dates anymore. I fell in love with hosting, and I was like, man, I really want to do this. And since then, I got to host a spinoff of Chopped. I got to host what was going to be a big, big show on NBC, like with an Olympics lead in. And I was doing a great job. And for it to, like, you know, sucks that it didn't get shown and people didn't get to see that I did a great job, but I know I did a great job, and the people who made it know I did a great job. And the fact that, like, you know, that's all I hear now is them being like, well, we're gonna, you know, we don't stop making shows, we'll find something else to put you in. And like, those type of things mean a lot to me, you know. And you can tell when it's people just shining you on, but like, when the fact they're like, no man, you are a good host, you're so charming, it's fun, like, and I'm like, I love doing this. I'm like, oh, we'll find it, something will work out. It just sucks when you are like, oh, I thought this was it. I thought I was gonna sit next to Bobby Moynihan and put retired NBA players down giant slip and slides well into my 50s. I thought that was be fun.
Well, that, but you're right. The thing is, like, you know, at a certain point in your career, you have to recognize that it's not an accident anymore. You know, it's like the result of the work that you've put in and the showing up and being cool and doing a good job. And, you know, hopefully it sounds like you do, you know, that that was not an anomaly. Like, it definitely will happen again, because you've already proved that you can do it, and you're doing it over and over and over again. So that show will come alive. Like it will happen. And then, you know, at that point, it might be a case where you might do something that was unthinkable to you 20 years ago, which is you'll consider if you feel like taking on another thing, you know, like mm-hmm. when you think about quality of life over this kind of like the mythos of the successful career, the elusive, whatever that is. And it's like, well, what are the quality of life choices? And maybe you'll take it and maybe you'll go, nah, cause then I won't get to see my son as much or my wife or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I always feel really bad. I feel a lot of empathy for performers who, you know, like the Dana Carveys or the Rick Moranises, who at a certain point was like, I want to spend time with my kids. I want to spend time with my family. And then outwardly people are like, well, I mean, what happened to that guy? Why do you, it's like, he wanted a better life. They're still funny. They still work, but maybe these people just wanted to enjoy their lives and not be on this fucked up hamster wheel of the entertainment business. All that. I have so much respect for the strength of character it takes to step away from a quote successful career and choose quality of life and family.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's like still being a true artist. Like I never got into this job to be like, oh, what's the like thing that's going to get me the most money or make me the most famous? Like, I just was like, I like fun stuff. I like doing fun stuff. When I go on like Cupcake Wars or something, it, to me, I was like, I never thought anyone asked me to do something silly like this. This is so fun. I get to do stuff like that. So that's how I look at usually anything. Like I've turned down jobs before. I'd, you know, turned a job down in the middle of the pandemic when I didn't know if other money was coming in, just because I was like, oh, it'll make me money, but like it doesn't sound that fun. And so, and I had been in, luckily, I've had enough experience in this career that I did a show for just the money before and thought it wasn't going to be fun, and found out what it does to my psyche and what it does to my mood and how I like come home and not nice to, you know, not a horrible person, but I'm not as like, I'm short with people. I'm short with my son. I'm short with my wife. And I'm not, I have to feel like I'm funny. I have to feel like I'm helping out, that I'm thinking, that I'm growing. If yeah. I'm just like pitching jokes and we're like, all right, we're done, we're going home, we don't like to improvise, we're just, you know, we're just 9 to 5, we're going home. And then there's a lot of shows like that. I'm like, oh, I didn't know that. And maybe when I'm older, that'll be something I'm interested in. But right now, I love problem solving. I like being on weird stuff. I like, you know, like poorly drawn lines when just working with Reza, and he'll like have this like really smart, well-written script, and then but he doesn't mind if I'm like, oh, but like, what if I joke off of this and do this with it? Or what if I turn it this way? And he's cool with me talking through that, and some places aren't. But like, I can't really, I don't work well with one without the other. I have to feel like my input is also valued.
Yeah. And Reza did such an amazing job. I mean, he's just such a genius. Also like one of the nicest people. And you know, for people who don't know, Poorly Drawn Lines is a really popular webcomic. And then my production company, Fish Ladder, worked with it. And then it went to FXX. And it is airing now every week on Cake, which is their short-form animation program. And it's on Hulu the next day. And that's my plug for that whole show. But I'm
yeah,
so...
just go to Hulu and put in Poorly Drawn Lines. I'm sure the other cartoons are great. I think Paul F. Tompkins is in one. I think that's great. But like, I like Poorly Drawn Lines.
Well, it's, you know, he's done something which is really hard to do, which is... He's taken a webcomic, which if you read just a static comic, obviously people have their own ideas in their head, like what do the voices sound like, what's this, how would it work? But to port a comic to an animation, to an animated show, is a really hard thing to do. And he did it so brilliantly and flawlessly and seamlessly that it's the two coexist. And I was so, you know, I mean, I didn't do anything for the show. It's just our production company was involved in getting it on the air, and you know, our people who work at Fish Ladder are more involved, but Reza just did such a stellar job. Like I was just so blown away from like day one seeing the first animatics, like, fuck, this is really great. He already knows exactly what this is. Mm-hmm. And it didn't feel like the first season of a show. It really just felt like you've dropped in already when the show had hit its stride, which is a really hard thing to do.
No, I agree. And I don't blow smoke about projects. Usually if I'm just like in it, I'm like, I'll bring it up and I'll plug it. But like, this is I'm very like, as a stoner teen who grew up watching like Aqua Teen Hunger Force. And then now like Dana, the voice of Master Shake, is in Poorly Drawn Lines. And like, I'm like, this is a show that would have been on like prime Adult Swim. Like this is a show that is smart and weird and it's a little bit askew. It doesn't necessarily like before everything is just like how violent or how like Robot Chicken-y it can be, which are fine shows. But now to me, like they lean so much into like just slapstick violence and over the topness, where like what I loved about Adult Swim at its height to me was like shows like Home Movies, shows that were like weird and silly and adult but in this animated way, and were like dry and smart like Dr. Katz. And like I mean the best compliment I can give Poorly Drawn Lines, like I would watch this show whether I was in it or not. I mean, usually me hearing my own voice in the show is a detriment to me watching it, but like I watch this show. I look forward to it every week. It's just so smart and weird and funny, and my wife likes it. I think it's a great, I mean, I think
and a phenomenal cast too, like Darcy Carden, and then just like a bunch, and also like a bunch of really amazing guest stars. Like it's just it is just like one of those things that, just like you said, it's just everything about it is like everything just kind of connects, everything just really works, and it's fun. And I like a thing that's just fun and silly for fun and silly sake, you know? Mm-hmm. And also just that kind of surrealist take on things too, where everything can be normal and all of a sudden for no explanation just go like wildly fantastical, but it's still grounded somehow. And then all just kind of wraps up at the end. Like it, I don't know. It just, I just absolutely love the show. I just love it. And I love you on it.
Me and I'm too. So glad that you did. I was excited. I didn't know much about the webcomic until a little bit after my audition for it. And then I realized that like a lot, which is always a good sign for me, because I usually date pretty cool women, but a lot of my ex-girlfriends liked the webcomic. And I was like, oh, and I saw a Kevin like specific strip where he was like, where he was just talking about how nice he was and that he would kick the ass of anybody nicer. And I was like, oh, that's me to a T. Like, oh, I totally should be this bird.
Well, I was excited that if it was up to me, they would have just offered it to you. But, you know, networks and so forth, you know, they have to go through their processes. And but I just had a feeling that it was Ron's going to knock this out of the park. Ron's totally going to knock this out of the park. But you have to also understand how exciting it is for me as your friend and as someone who's been a fan of yours for so long to just watch you blossoming in all of these amazing ways. It just, I hope it doesn't sound condescending to say that that delights me, because it's like watching people discover what I already knew about you, you know? Like, I don't know. It's just fun. It's just fun.
That makes me feel really good. I appreciate that very much. And I've always appreciate how much you supported me and just been nice to me and nice to comedians in general. And I always try to return a favor. I always try to, be loyal and supportive to you.
Well, so, I appreciate that. That's why I appreciate that you do Talking Dead. I appreciate you do the podcast. Mm-hmm. And I think
people, that was what I was going to mention. Cause I don't know. Do you think I'm up to date on that? I don't care.
Come on. Hey, spoil the. What are you talking about, Ron?
I'm not saying I don't like it. I do like the show, man. No, some of the thing at the Beyond I had to learn about.
Well, you did a great job, and it is one of those things, especially reflecting now back on. It's very surreal to think that show's ending, you know, that it's like this thing that, yeah, I mean, it's upsetting, but it's also like, how can you be mad at getting to do a show for 11 or 12 years. You know what I mean? Yeah, it's like, well, that's rare. That's not something that happens very, you know, unless you're on like a Law and Order, you know, mm-hmm. if you're on a Dick Wolf show, sure, you can work on a show for 30 years or, you know, but outside of that, there's not a lot of, especially with streaming now, I don't think streaming shows are going to get to do 11 seasons of mm-hmm. anything anymore. I think those days are coming to a close.
Yeah, no, and I don't like it. I wish it. I loved, to me, that's one of the greatest things about shows, when you go back and can look at the catalog and watch the rise of a show, watch when they reach their peak, watch when like they're at their most popular, but maybe not at their creative peak, and then watch as it goes tanks and see when it goes bad. Like, those are my favorite things with sitcoms. I love watching it when you're like watching Martin and you're like, oh, you could tell everybody hated each other here.
But don't you like to watch those parts where on a show where it can dip, but then it comes back around? And it's
The Office did that. And also going back and then being like, wow, these later seasons of The Office weren't as nearly as bad as a lot of people tried to say when they were mad that Steve Carell left. There's some really good stuff in the later seasons. Clark Duke does a great job. There's some good stuff.
I can't imagine what it must be like. I mean, I always think about, you know, I always think about a show like the, you know, The Simpsons, or a show that's, I mean, there are a handful of animated shows that have been on for a significant amount of time. And it's like the job of having to write new storylines for a show that's been on for decades. I mean, I feel like it's challenging to do that after a couple of seasons, much less decades, mm-hmm. you know, that a show has been on, when people know the characters so well, when they maybe have gone through periods where the characters have become caricatures of themselves, mm-hmm. because there's just like, what else can you do? And so, you know, I think that I'm very forgiving with things because I know how hard it is to make stuff, and to make stuff consistently. It's just fucking so hard. Mm-hmm. So I think that's why I'm, you know,
That's why I like the Venom movie. A lot of people were hating on it, but I'm like, sometimes I just want campy fun. I don't need an Oscar winner with every movie. Venom should just curse at people and be weird and eat heads. And he did that. So my son had a good time.
I wish that had been the marketing campaign. Listen, sometimes you just need a new movie where Venom curses at people and eats heads. And that's this movie. Enjoy. And I think people are like, okay, I get it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Except people are like, oh, it's a little over the top. I know this. It's not as good as this movie. I mean, it's what we talk about with comedians. Like, it was fun. It was silly. I enjoyed it. My son liked it. But I think it is. Also, I think it's two things, right? As you get older and as you get experience working in this business. But when I was younger, I was like, oh, that sucks. This sucks. But, you know, this shouldn't even have any right to exist. Who would want to watch this show? But I think one of the greatest sentences you can learn at any age is to go, like, this isn't for me, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Or the other thing is that, you know, when we talk about the they, you know, they say, oh, all these people said this about this movie, or they didn't like this. We do have to remember sometimes that that's not everybody. It's like it's like a percentage of people will hate something, and a percentage of people will think it's the greatest thing they've ever seen. But then there's a lot of people in the middle, a significant number, which is probably more representative of what the actual acceptance of a thing is, with like, yeah, most people were just fine with it, but not so much that they had to go online and talk about it, or they didn't hate it so much that they had to go, but it was fine. Like, it was exactly the kind of experience they wanted, and fine. But then they just weren't vocal about it. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? And I think that probably is somewhere in the middle where, like, most people live with stuff.
Yeah. And I think on a grand scheme, you got to look at it that way, because you get online for too long, you think we're on the beginning of a race war, but traveling the road, that's one thing I think I was talking about with Jeremiah Watkins. There's another comedian where, like, traveling the road always reminds you that, like, we're a lot more alike and we're a lot more chill and a lot nicer to each other when you're in person than you would ever be, like, online when people are so passionate about different things. But, like, at the end of the day, if I was like, oh, I hate this movie, you know, this movie, but we're like, oh, we can still go get some food together, you know?
Well, yeah, looking people in the eyes, I mean, I had forgotten until we went back to Talking Dead to do the shows live with an audience. I knew I really loved that experience, but I think I forgot how much I needed it just as a performer, as just a person being around other people and just sort of seeing people's, you know, faces and hearing their response of just like, oh my God, I really forgot how wonderful this feels and how much I appreciate it and how much I miss going to shows and being able to look people in the eye and shake their hands and say thanks for coming to the show, or just sort of having that personal experience is just, it's really, I mean, I always say, like, I love doing the shows. All the stuff around stand up is a little bit of a chore, the travel and the, you know, the getting up early in the morning and doing press and then like making sure, oh, how many people bought tickets? Are we going to have enough? But, you know, it's like stressing about, but the actual shows and the meeting the people, it's the fucking best.
Yeah. No, it truly is. It's super fun, super easy. And not many other jobs where you're like, oh, I'm just working 45 minute chunks and I'm done and I get to eat food. They bring it to me. It's a beautiful thing. I love it so much.
I hope that when people, if anyone out there is like, oh, I want to do what Ron Funches does, I hope they, what they do when they emulate you is to choose the things that they love doing, have fun, ask that pivotal question of like, you know, is this fun? Is this giving me a good quality of life? Not so much copying the way that you do things, but copying the way that you go about doing things. You know,
yeah.
I'm looking in your background right now and I just see all these amazing game platforms. I see a VR unit and I just know, like, you know, you've really carved out this really great thing. You know, you have a wonderful wife and a great son and you play video games and you do it for charity, but then you get to do voiceover and then you get to do acting stuff and then you get to host and then you get to do stand up. Like, and you really chose all of that. You really crafted that. That was by design, but it's hard for everyone. It's hard sometimes, I think, for people to know that they can do that because they feel like they have to fit into certain boxes. They're told, like, well, it doesn't really work that way, you know? And it's like, well, maybe it doesn't work that way because someone hasn't done it.
Yeah, no, leaning into whatever you love and having it be authentic. That's what I think works for me, you know? Like, I've been able to get a good amount of career and fan from the pro wrestling community. It's not because I was like, oh, look at this rabid fan base of people that like wrestling. Let me go in and pretend like I like wrestling and then they're going to like me. It's like, I love this stuff. I naturally was into it before. I mean, that's one of the biggest pluses in my life is all these things that were considered detriments or uncool for me. The things that I love, the fact that I was a big gamer, big into wrestling, the way my voice sounds as a young, you know, black man growing up in Chicago are all now things that have aided my career and aided me in having a better life. And so that's all I can say is like, yeah, lean into what you truly love and what truly makes you happy, and you will find a way to make it work, find a way to make it profitable for you if you're passionate about it. Please also don't copy me. I see enough of that in like random commercials and TV shows where I'm like, oh, they're doing, oh, that was a Ron Funches type on that breakdown.
They could have just hired Ron Funches.
They could have, but that, you know, they never want to pay properly.
But it's all those things that you're talking about. It's like leaning into yourself, basically. Those are the things that make you unique and the most interesting and the most to stand out the most. And those are the things that I think we're conditioned both by society and ourselves when we're kids, thinking we have to fit in, we got to fit in. And then society going, you got to fit in, you got to fit in. Mm-hmm. And then you kind of have to learn, oh, no. Like you said, all those things are your strengths. And those are the things when you get older, trying to be like everyone else is kind of a death sentence because it just makes you like saccharine. Like it just blends you into everything, you know? Mm-hmm. And you don't really need to look outside yourself to grow because, you know, everyone has stuff about themselves that's unique, and maybe it's stuff you were ashamed about when you were younger. Or I'm ashamed that I liked this, or I played these games or this. And those are all the things that make you fun and interesting when you're older and the things that you enjoy the most. So I feel like it's riskier to not lean into yourself, you know, the older you get.
I agree with you 100%. It's boring. And it makes you just angry because you're like, why? Why are you wasting so much time just following a pack, just be yourself and enjoy what you enjoy. It means you already win. You don't have to have anybody else win for you. That's been the best thing for me is outside of the career stuff, it's just being like, oh, when I used to have a bad set, it used to be the end of my life, you know? But now I'm like, oh, whether I have a great set, whether I have a bad set, I'm going to come home and I'm going to be with my son and I'm going to be with my beautiful wife and I'm going to play the games that I like. My friends are going to be around me. So I already win. So it doesn't matter. Either way, I'm going to swing again tomorrow.
Well, that's really just about enjoying the moments and enjoying the process. And it's really just hard to remember that sometimes because there's no real metric for, especially in the creative arts, it's hard to have metrics for success. So we look at things like how much money, how many episodes, how many followers, all those things. It's like, yeah, those are accidental. What's your quality of life? Are you happy with you? You know? Mm-hmm. And it's okay. You don't have to make all of the money or do all of the, but you should be happy and you should like yourself and you should enjoy your life and more of something means more of everything, mm-hmm. you know, like mm-hmm. more problems, more responsibilities, more stress. And as much as you think it means more appreciation, more validation, more, you know, it's like mm-hmm. more means more of everything. And that's really hard to remember sometimes.
Yeah, it's hard. People get overwhelmed. It's always surprising to me when I see people that I would consider at least monetarily more successful than I, but they don't take care of their life balance. They don't even there'll be people and they're they haven't taken a vacation in 10 years. They don't have an assistant. They don't have anything that helps them within they're like, I mean, I'll tell directly before I talk shit, I talked to Fortune Feebster and she was tweeting about being on hold for Delta for 8 hours. And I was you act all day. You are on the theater comedian. You don't have an assistant that could have been hold on Delta for you. And the thing she's like, well, I didn't come up from that type. I'm Midwest, it's not, I'm a, just be like, I don't want to be a person with an assistant. That's a different. I go, right. Yeah, but that's someone who could use that job, who would love to work for you. You would be helping them out. You have the money, and then you won't be on hold in Delta for 6 hours.
And you can focus on the thing that you do, the stuff that you focus on, or even just focus on the life balance stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Can I ask you about the wrestling?
Sure.
Thing that you did, because that when I found out that you did that, I was excited because I knew how excited you would have been to get to do that. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh my God, Ron got to do a wrestling thing. I can't imagine anyone who could be happier that they got to do a legit full on wrestling match. So I just have questions about training. How long did it take? Is it something you're going to do again? How did it come about? All that stuff.
Okay. I'll start at the beginning. I mean, the very, very beginning, when I was 32, 33, a friend of mine passed away and it kind of suddenly, and it just kind of put into my head that thing, that we go through sometimes oh, we die. I better go do some things I want to do. And I'd always wanted to, my whole life, I either wanted to be a comedian or I wanted to be a professional wrestler. And I went to this school in 2 hours south. It's the Bell Gardens. So I would get off work and stuff. And I take this 2 hour drive to this class and I would go there. I went there for 3 months, but it was a serious class. It was I remember one time we did 300 squats in one sitting. And I was this sucks. I vomited. And then they made me clean up the vomit after. But it was still a good experience. Me pushing myself as far as come. I had never done any team sports in any manner. But I also was going on the road doing stand up. So I would miss some classes, come back and be behind the rest of the class. And at some point I was oh, I'm hurting the person. Whoever's got a lock up with me and I've missed
two or three classes, I'm a detriment to them learning. So at some point I just dropped out of the class and just thought I wouldn't wrestle at all. But then this other guy just reached out to me, and this wrestler named Shane Thorne in the WWE. I think he's coming with this really like Crocodile Dundee Steve Irwin Australian gimmick because he's Australian. But before that, he wore a hockey mask and his name was Slapjack, which is not threatening in any manner. But he's a real fun guy, and he knew a lot of people in the LA, like not necessarily stand-up scene, but in comedy writing, YouTube stuff. And he just reached out to me on Instagram and was like, oh, I knew you were training before. If you ever want to come spend time at my ring, just come on by. I went to one of the class, and it was like the opposite of what I had been through before. It wasn't serious. It was a bunch of comedian writers who just love wrestling, but we'd, you know, make sure not to hurt each other. And if we, you know, it was more like if you made a mistake, people would laugh. And I was like, oh, this is much more my speed. I'm not going to die here. And I had been going to these shows at this company called Game Changer Wrestling, and where I do commentating. And I just naturally been talking trash when commentating to certain wrestlers and inviting them onto my Twitch show. And one guy, Tony Deppen, he was just kind of a real jerk when he came on my Twitch show, act like he was doing me a favor, like he thought he was the bigger star than I. And so we just naturally did not hit it off. And we just kept building and kept building. I kept talking trash anytime I got to do commentating. And then at one point he just started making fun of me on Twitter because he heard me. He would go back and listen to his matches. And so he would at me. And then the owner of the company was like, do you guys really have issues with each other? And I was like, you know, like, not really, but I don't but kind of, but not really. And so he was like, well, what if we did a match? And I was like, well, I mean, no one's ever asked me directly, and this is probably my only chance to do one. And I was like, yeah, let's do a wrestling match. And it couldn't have gone any better. Like, just the online stuff of me talking about it on The Late Show with James Corden, him slapping me in the face, my ex-wife thinking it was all real and DMing him.
Oh, no.
That was a weird, that was like, I was like, my ex-wife thinks this is real.
Oh my gosh. And was it the actual doing of it? Were you nervous? Were you able to just stay in the moment? I mean, obviously it is a performance, but it's a performance where people can get hurt if they're not like super focused and trained and know what they're doing. So how was the actual mechanics of doing it?
I was so nervous. I didn't want a lot of this. Like, if you think like stand-up fans are ruthless, man, you know, they got nothing on wrestling fans. So because as soon as people found out I was doing this match, and I'm the baby face in this situation, I'm the good guy, he's the bad guy. And but so many people were tweeting at me like, Tony's gonna beat you up, you're gonna look so bad, you're not gonna know what you're doing, you're a fat piece of crap. This, like, they would go all out about how you're going to embarrass the entire wrestling community. And so I was like, man, I'm going to show, they don't know. I went to class for months. They don't know I used to be 360 pounds and lost a bunch of weight. They don't know that I get it in the gym every fucking day, that I'm lifting, that I could outlift probably any one of those people. They don't know. They just see a chubby dude. And so I was like, I'm going to show them that I can do it. And then Tony, that was kind of his attitude. My opponent, Tony Deppen, he was like, let's show them. He's like, I'm going to make you look good.
That's so cool.
Yeah. And so he was basically, he talked to me through the whole time. It's probably wasn't my best thing, but I tried to get there early, but I got there like a half hour before door. So we really only had like, we got to walk through it for like 10 minutes. He was basically like, we'll do this. He's like, let me see if we can do a Canadian Destroyer, which is where like I hold him and then we do like a flip and he lands on his head. And so we practiced it once and he was like, basically, he's like, when we do this, you're going to need to just go for it. You can't hesitate. If you hesitate, it's not going to look good. I'm not going to be able to get you up. And he's also, and he's like, and like, make sure you lean your face sideways. If you don't, if you put your face directly on me, when I land, I'm going to break your nose.
Oh my God. But don't worry. I know we tried this once, but don't worry. It'll be fine.
Yeah. Yeah. So I basically, that was one of the things in my head. It's like, hold my head sideways, jump with all my fucking might. And it was, you know, I just loved doing it. And at the end of it, what was cool for me is, like you said, it was real special for me because there were friends that I had known for years there, friends who I went to wrestling with, Anise Ansari, who's like just a wrestling, he goes to all the wrestling shows in LA, and he was there. My friend X-Pac, who had just was known for years, was there. And just this guy who I grew up watching as a little kid, this wrestler named Too Cold Scorpio, one of the first like legitimate like black stars who wasn't like coming, like he would dance and stuff, but he wasn't coming out shucking and jiving and being like stereotypical. He was like a legit badass. And so like me meeting him was a real dream come true. And then after my match, he was like, oh, like they told me you don't wrestle, like they told me this was your first match. He goes like, this might be your first match, but it damn sure wasn't your first time in front of a crowd. You are truly an entertainer. And I was like, that is like one of the best compliments I've ever received in my life. This guy I grew up watching telling me like, look, I don't know what it is you do. I don't know you, but I could tell you are trained in what you do. You are clearly a professional.
That's so exciting because listen, you could probably, it'd probably be really great if, you know, like, I don't know, Spielberg came up to you and was like, hey man, I really like what you do. I think you're great. But I feel like the story you're going to tell the rest of your life is how that guy, this guy that you grew up watching, appreciated your work, got to see you shine and complimented you. And like that, those things that we kind of form when we're young, they just stick with us, you know? Like that's gotta be one of the most influential experiences of your life. It was so cool that other wrestler like worked with you and showed you how to do everything and like was like, no, let's make this fun and let's make this a thing. I don't know. I have so much respect for it because I didn't really watch wrestling when I was growing up. But the more I get to know wrestlers and the more I get to know about it, it just makes me love the people involved in the process because of how entertainment focused it is and how much of a collective community that it is. You know, that's really nice.
Brotherhood and sisterhood of like, and what I love is truly how progressive it's gotten. There's so many like outwardly gay and bi and transgender wrestlers now, and just this like very open environment in this place that you would assume would not be open. And that's one of the things I really like about Game Changer in particular. But like at the end of it, like, you know, as comedians, we kind of learn that brotherhood when we're on the road together, when you're like bombing with each other. But can you imagine what it's like to like be in a ring with someone and like they know you have a family, you know they have a family, and like you got to go out there and try to kind of fight each other and show a great crowd, but you also want to make sure they get home to their family safe and sound. And like there's people who, you know, broke their necks, you know, paralyzed, all this stuff because like someone made a mistake. So there's got to be this like just this true level of trust and love with people that do it. And that's one of the things I love about it.
Yeah. If you're a comedian, if your opener doesn't have a great show, it doesn't break your leg.
Yeah.
You know, so like the whole physical element doesn't get worked in with what we do. No. Ron, I love you to pieces. It's so good to see you. I'm so glad you're happy. I'm so glad. How's your wife doing? Is she good?
She's doing great. She's good. Happy, doing well, working hard.
Well, it's so nice to see your face, and I just want to thank you for, you know, thanks for doing Talking Dead, and thanks for doing the podcast, and you know, and I hope we get to do a show together sometime soon, like a stand-up show. I haven't performed since February of 2020, and I'm, you know, I hope I rem- I was asking you, like, when you started performing again, were you worried you forgot how to do it? And you go, yes. But obviously you didn't forget how to do it. But at least I feel like I'm not alone. And like, do I know how to talk in front of people anymore? I think I do. I don't know.
No, you're not alone. And you still do it. You talk on, you know, you're talking in the shows. You're talking on the podcast. You're still exercising those muscles in a different way. You know, it'll be weird and it'll feel weird, I'm sure. But like, I found, like, especially when I just was doing headline shows, like by the end of the first weekend, I was like, oh, like I may not have all my jokes. I may not have everything I need, but I remember how my rhythm goes. I can remember how to talk and I can at least put in some subjects. And if I fuck up, I know how to bail out of it. So that's good too.
Well, Ron, I don't know if there's any better way to do a podcast.
She can't stay here. That takes me back to Oregon. Closing time. I don't know. I could not tell you the lyrics.
ID10T scanning complete. Enjoy your burrito.